Massachusetts Retro Asylum, the UK's number one retro gaming podcast show. Ultimate video game, the Sega Master System, with twice as much memory as any other video game. Advanced video technology like scrolling backgrounds, graphics in 64 colors, digital sounds, and light phasers. And you can add to the excitement with sports pads, control sticks, and the first video games ever in 3D.
Sega's the one.
The Sega Master System. The challenge will always be there.
Hello and welcome to episode 116 of Retro Asylum. Now for today's episode we wanted to discuss the brilliant 8-bit Sega console, that is the Master System. And taking us through it will be myself, Paul Driscoll, aka the Drisk, Ali Hogg, aka the Retro Hunter, and Steve Erickson, aka Press Play on Tape. So how are you guys doing anyway?
Yeah, I'm pretty good, mate. Glad you got my AKA in. That's important.
Yes.
As I keep getting told now, I should drop it, so I'm sticking with it.
Yeah, you're still allowed to use your moniker.
Yeah,
your
it's name. Mine. I am Press Play on Tape, the one and only.
Is it Press Play on Tape TM or something like that?
Yeah, TM, copyright 2015, exclusive. I've got it. It's gone to the. I've got the legal document on the wall. It's mine. I mean, it's proven by Twitter. If you look on Twitter, it's me.
Well, I mean, for those not one perhaps wondering what the hell we're going on about, it's there's this new podcast, isn't it? And they've it's called the Press Play on Tape podcast, but nothing to do with you.
It's nothing to do with me. To be fair, it's one of my mates, Dax, who is a host of the Retro Domination podcast in Australia, and he's come out with a Press Play on Tape Commodore podcast. Well, I think it was originally Commodore 64, and it's like gone sort of Commodore and 8-bit and 16-bit now. But I've had a quick listen. It's pretty good. So, yeah, you know, if you want to have a listen to Commodore 64 stuff and beyond, give it a listen. But, yeah, he's pinched my name, Dax. Dax, I'm coming for you, mate. Well, yeah, no, and
how are you, Ali, as well?
Yes, I'm very well, thank you. Yeah, all good here. Been playing with some Master System games today in preparation for today's podcast.
Yeah, same here. I've been really enjoying all of that. Well, before we start the main topic, I thought it would be interesting to talk about, you know, things that we've been doing retro-related. So, Steve, you know, what have you been up to retro-wise?
Oh, what haven't I been up to? I mean, obviously we all did play recently. I know we've done a podcast on it, but I've...
Yeah.
Had time to get home now and reflect. As I think at the end of the last podcast, I sort of mentioned that I might be going to go out and buy a Retron 5 at the Expo. As you'll know, I did buy one. So, yeah, I've been playing with that, which is it's really cool.
How have you been finding it? Is it really impressive with how it does the emulation? Because it's still emulating,
isn't it? It's a cool bit of kit. It's really clever. I've got a small LCD screen upstairs, and loads of my mates have sort of been just turning into work. Once they found out I've got like an old console and stuff, they've been like just turning up and giving me bags full of games. Just like, oh yeah. Like one of my mates came into work and just gave me a bag with like 20 SNES games in it. Like,
oh,
like
wow.
15 of them. 15 of them are boxed, and they're all like...
Bloody hell.
Like, what? Loads. Yeah, like proper like boxed, great quality. What did he give me? Like Poppin' Twimby and Street Fighter 2, Super Street Fighter, like the Japanese one. There's all sorts in there.
Nice.
In the heck.
Yeah.
I wish I had mates like that.
It's cool, man. And another mate come in and give me like some Bomberman games for the Mega Drive. And it's really cool. But I think the thing with the Retron is it's a great bit of kit, don't get me wrong. It's like I've got an LCD and I've hooked it up with an HDMI because that's the connection it does. And it's got some like filter settings. So you can basically like stop it looking so sharp and crisp, because I don't like it to look too crisp. I want it to look a bit more as it did in the day.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
So it's got some nice filters and stuff. The controller that comes with it, though, is absolutely awful. It's one of the worst controllers I've ever seen in my life.
I think they must have just known that people would use the original ones and I'm not going to bother working too hard on the controller.
Yeah, I mean that's the beauty of it, isn't it? Because you can connect all the original controllers, and that's it's fantastic. But I think it's a weird thing, and I'd say this, like, there's some part of the human mind, the human brain, that knows that you're cheating somewhere. I don't know what it is, and I don't know why it is, and it's the same, like, and I'm getting this now, like, because I used to do a lot of emulation stuff, tons of it, MAME, Amiga stuff, all the different consoles and that. And I've started to slowly buy the hardware, the proper stuff, because there's something, you just know you're not on the real thing. And it's even the same with the Retron 5. Now, don't get me wrong, it's a fantastic system. It really is. And it's very, very close to feeling like the real deal, because you're grabbing a cartridge off a shelf, you're clunking it in, and you're holding the right controller. So it feels very, very, very authentic. But it's still one little part of your mind is going, this isn't the real one, though.
I know exactly where you're coming from with that.
So do I. I mean, I've got a modded Xbox, and that's got something like 9,000 some or so games on it, with all the SNES games, all the Mega Drive games, and everything like that. And it all upscales it to 720p as well, and it all looks absolutely fantastic. But I'm exactly the same. Sometimes when I'm being extremely lazy, I'll put that on and play games, and they look fantastic. But the downside is it's got the Xbox control pad, so it doesn't feel like you're playing the game.
Yeah.
And it looks too good. I mean, it looks good on an LCD, but it just looks a bit too good. So I can see how the Retron 5 can kind of counter that by using the authentic controller and use a few settings on it.
Go on.
I was going to say something I learned actually the other night, which was contrary to what I believed previously, was that I thought that every time you put a game in the Retron 5, well, the first time you put a certain game in the Retron 5, it dumped the ROM and kept it, so that if you played a different game on it, it actually played the original ROM. But I've subsequently found out that actually it dumps the ROM and then removes it afterwards.
That's correct,
Because I was thinking of getting one for testing purposes, because obviously I get lots of games in and out all the time, and getting each console out to test stuff on, especially NES games, because the NESs I've got aren't particularly very good. Had the red flashing light, and it's a continual battle trying to get games to work. So I've now kind of turned around and thought, Retron 5, that would save me a lot of time and effort.
Well, I think it still would. I've only got a few NES games, but they all work fine. What it does is, as soon as you put that cartridge in, at the top of the screen, it'll just go loading, and it'll count to 100% really quick, like 2 or 3 seconds. Mm. But once it does, it'll tell you the name of the game, if the cartridge is working. It'll literally pop up at the top and just say, you know, Super Mario Brothers or whatever, Super Mario World. But it does, like you say, when you pull that cartridge back out, it's just gone again. It's pretending or acting like a real console. It's not like you could just keep putting cartridges in and storing them all up on the hard drive.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah. So, Ali, how about yourself? What have you been up to?
To be honest, I haven't been buying that much. I've been...
No, I don't believe it.
I've been going to the odd boot sale and stuff like that, and I've got a few things here and there, but, I mean, I haven't... Believe this, okay? I have not been to a single boot sale all weekend, so none on Saturday, none on Sunday, and none on bank holiday Monday.
My word. Are you ill?
My word.
I'm not ill.
did they send out search party for you?
I tell you, some certain collectors in the area must have thought it was it was their weekend. I'm away on a stag do next week in Poland, so that's going to take up some serious money, so I've been on a bit of a buying ban this week. Last week I actually had to bite the bullet and hired, was it last week or week before? I can't remember now. I had to hire out a storage unit to to house a lot of stuff that was basically making my garage inaccessible due to boxes and boxes of stuff. So now my wife and my child and my son are very happy that they can get their bikes out.
Nice.
And use their bikes.
Well, interestingly, now that you've stopped buying stuff, like, I've taken over the mantle for a week. I bought that. Obviously, you sold me that Master System, didn't you, at Play? You got me a Master System, which is I've been using for this episode, and it's been fantastic. And I think that's the one thing that kind of triggered to me, that the difference between the Master System and the Retron was the fact that one's real and one isn't, in a sense.
Uh-oh. It's begun, Steve. It's begun.
Yeah, it has. The addiction.
Well,
in the
time since then, I've now gone on to buy an Amiga, a different TV, a GoTek drive for the Amiga, and today I bought a Spectrum, which Swainy will be pleased about, and Paul Davies.
Yeah.
So I'm about to give that a go, yeah. I got an absolute bargain today on eBay for the Spectrum. Managed to pick up a ZX Spectrum Plus 2, good condition. Two carrier bags full of original games. All the wires, it's not boxed, but all the wires and stuff. And he's thrown in a free ZX81 for nothing. And all that was £20.
Nice.
That's amazing price, yeah. Particularly with the ZX81. Providing it works.
But
even if not, it's a great bit of history.
Well, that'll just go on
the shelf. So you're going to become a Spectrum boy now?
Well, no, I'm not becoming a Spectrum boy. Paul, the plan is to start at the bottom. So I'm for a Spectrum. And then I'm going to climb up to the mighty heights of the C64 and then work my way back around to the Amiga. So, yeah, I thought, you know, start at the bottom of the ladder with the ZX, the Plus 2, and work my way up from there.
Well, you might as well. Well, now you've got a dedicated game room. I'm so jealous of you with your dedicated game room.
I'm loving it because I don't know if the listeners know, but I've moved into a new house and I've got a little box room. And bought a table from IKEA the other week, so I've like doubled the length of the computer desk and stuff. And yeah, it's great having them all just set up, easy to switch on. And I'm definitely starting to get a little bit of an addiction for like wanting to pick up the hardware now and get the right proper real games for it and the proper joysticks and everything. And yeah, I'm getting itchy fingers for this thing. It's
the
worrying.
Addiction starts.
Yeah.
You remember that thing you used to have called money?
Yeah. Starting to slip away.
You have to build it up as an investment. It's an investment. It's joy and an investment. It's like a bank account that makes you happy.
Yeah, it's fine. It's assets is what it is.
Exactly. Assets.
Well, you guys have been putting me all to shame. I mean, the only thing that I've ordered and I've still not had yet is the Sturmwind on the Dreamcast.
Okay.
So that's like a 2013 game.
Yeah.
Quite recent.
It looks really good, that game. Where did you get it from? Because I'm interested in getting that.
Yeah, well, I bought it because I just know the like the sellers, because I bought before, PlayAsia. I was told that after I bought it, there's a guy that I know at work, and he was like saying, you should have bought it from Red Spot, because it's cheaper international postage. I think they're the actual publishers.
Okay.
Of the game.
Okay.
I think there wasn't a lot in it. I think it was like £5 I would have saved, but still £5's £5.
Definitely.
But yeah, no, I can't wait because it looks absolutely awesome. So I'm dead excited for that. It's like a horizontal shooter for those who don't know, and it's just so beautiful to look at. And this game's they've been working on it since 1997, and the Jaguar, it was originally on the Jaguar, and they've sort of like obviously completely redone the essence of the game, now released on the Dreamcast finally. So everybody's saying is, you know, it's just like such a brilliant shooter. Very excited with that.
When you play that, Paul, look out for the Jaguar logo, which is hidden in the background somewhere.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I saw Tom from Twitter, from Retro Collect Podcast, also does Dreamcast Junkyard.
Oh, yes.
He did a review, and he's a massive Jaguar fan as well. He loves the Jaguar and the Dreamcast. Big shout out to Tom. Hello, Tom, because I know he listens and likes podcasts.
Hi, Tom.
Hello, Tom.
And, yeah, he posted something about there being a Jaguar logo in the background somewhere, which he was happy about.
Oh, I'll have to look out for
that. Perfect merger of the two systems he loves.
Yeah, no, absolutely awesome. Well, I suppose, guys, should we get on to the actual main topic that we're supposed to be talking about? Let's do the main topic of the Master System.
Yeah,
shall we?
Let's do it.
Yeah, no, that's cool. I thought before we start talking about the beautiful Master System, it'd be good to understand sort of how we all came to the Sega Master System and, you know, our sort of history with the console. So, Ali, for yourself, how about, you know, how did you come to the Sega Master System?
Well, I'm proud to say that I was a Sega Master System owner back in the day. It was the first console that I owned all by myself, whereas the previous console had the Atari 2600 was shared with my brother. I must have got, I don't know if it's a birthday or Christmas present, must have been one of the two, but I was lucky enough to get the original Master System base unit, so just like the one that I sold to you, Steve.
Nice.
the original Mark One.
System One Mark One.
Such a beautiful console. Yeah. Isn't it?
Looks a bit like a Star Trek control panel.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It just looks so gorgeous.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to. I really struggle to remember what games I had for it, but I definitely had Vigilante, which remains one of my favourite games for the Master System. I definitely had a racing game, which might have been Super Monaco Grand Prix, or maybe that was on the Game Gear. I can't remember, but the funniest thing I do remember about the Master System is that my dad said to me, "What do you like for Christmas?" And I said, "I want a game for my Master System." He said, "Okay, no worries." I gave him a big long list of games. When Christmas came, I opened this game up, and it was none of the games that I wanted. It was none of the ones that I wanted, but he said, "I tried to get you the most educational game I could possibly find," and he got me. Where in the World Is Carmen Sandiego? You ever heard of that game?
Oh, he didn't. Oh, yeah, no. I have. Disappointment.
I was a little disappointed, yeah, to say the least. But funnily enough, I was looking through some old photos a few months back, and I'll have to find it. When I find it, I'll post it on Twitter or something and tag Retro Asylum with it. But I found a picture of me sitting in my old bedroom, and I've got my old school uniform on from the first year of senior school. And I know it's definitely the first year because everyone got these red jumpers, and then everyone after literally a couple of months realised that they were not cool and no one wore them. So I was still wearing the red jumper, so it must have been probably September 1990. So I must have had my Master System for about a year before that, so I must have got it around 1989. But that's the only picture that I've ever seen of me actually playing one of the old retro consoles back in the day. No other picture exists of me playing anything. Maybe a Game Boy, but certainly no actual home consoles.
Oh, you'll have to tag us in it when you put it up so we can have a look.
Yeah, that'd be great.
You can see my little VHS shelf above me with all my Arnold Schwarzenegger films on it.
Nice.
And Police Academy collection.
That photo could not be more of the era, could it?
Exactly. Yeah, I've got really really uncool spiky blonde hair as well.
And you, Steve, what was your, how have you sort of come to the Master System?
The Master System for me was a stepping stone, really, between getting my Commodore 64, having a Commodore 64 and getting an Amiga. I had a Commodore 64 for about 2 years, and then I started seeing those adverts on the TV. I think we're going to use the sound from one somewhere in the show, hopefully.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Well,
people will know it. I think, what was the tagline off it? Do me a favour.
Do me a favour, plug me into
that's the one with the big crazy face with the colours.
Yeah, that's the one.
And that advert kept coming on the telly. And I kept watching it. And I'd played some of the games as well on the arcade. Like, I know a lot of the arcade conversions always came to the Master System. Like Outrun and Space Harrier and all that kind of thing. And so I was like, I really want to get a console. And some of my mates had gone on the console route as well. And I was like, I've got this Commodore 64, but I want to get a console. So this Christmas, probably the same Christmas you're talking about, Ali. I said to Mum and Dad, can I have a Sega Master System for Christmas? So they got me one. And I didn't get any games with it. So I literally played to death Outrun. Hang On.
Yeah.
No, it's just Hang On, isn't it?
Yeah,
just Hang On.
Hang On, yeah.
Normal Hang On, yeah, yeah. I literally played that to death. And then discovered the snail game as well, which I'm sure we'll go into later on. But the secret snail game, which was rubbish. but it was like a little super bonus to have an extra game out of nowhere. So yeah, so played that for a little bit. And then my mate up the street, I think he had Double Dragon for it. So I borrowed that. And then I started getting a bit of a collection of games up. And we'll talk about these later, but some of the games I ended up getting for it. I had Cloudmaster. I don't know if you've heard of that one.
Oh, yeah, that's a sort of crazy shooter.
Yeah, I love that game. Side-scrolling shooter. I had Golden Axe, ridiculously fast and weird. And I've had the chance to relive that thanks to Ali supplying that with this one. He's so I've forgotten how ridiculous it was.
Golden Axe on drugs.
Yeah, yeah. Speedy Golden Axe. Sonic the Golden Axe. what was the other one I had called? Cloudmaster Psycho Fox.
Yeah,
love that. Weird. Yeah. Platform.
Weird. Another weird platform.
Weird platform.
We'll definitely come to all of these.
Come to these in a bit, yeah. And there was something else. What was the other one I had? Oh, Power Strike. Power Strike 1.
Power Strike?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Shoot 'em up. Is it called Power Strike?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a shame you don't still have that. That goes for a fortune, I think, the first one.
Oh, does it?
Does it? Yeah. I've got that.
Is it? I'm pretty sure that goes for it. I might be, probably people screaming that I'm talking out me. Posterior, but
my one's a really weird one. Mine's like a black and white case. Not black and white. It's white and blue, which is thought was weird when I picked it up.
Strange.
Even the instructions are white, blue and white as well. And when I've checked, it's proper. It's official. It's just
yeah
weird.
Well, have a look, Ali, because I've got a feeling that that's worth a pretty penny.
Oh, yeah, it's worth looking at.
Or I'm just talking out my ass.
Well, yeah,
the power of eBay at your fingertips, I shall tell.
Yeah. Well, I'm looked. Yeah, it's best to just sort of make statements without checking.
Interesting. The one. Well, that's a buy it now. Actually, I'm not gonna listen to that. I'll see what they sold for. But my one seems to be the rarer one.
We'll be on to a winner there, Ali.
People will be hearing the popping of champagne corks, as Ali realises.
Yeah, it would appear that the Power Strike with the colour box design goes for, that's weird, anywhere between about £20 and £35, it looks. And my one, which is mine is a US mail order version, which seems to go for about £70.
Nice.
Wow. Awesome. Yeah. He's always making us jealous, isn't he?
He's always just like finding bargains, even when he didn't even know he had them.
Sweet.
It's only a happy kind of jealousy.
Yeah, yeah. All good. He did me a great deal on that master system, so I'm fine with it. Yeah. I'm fine with it. Although he's led me down a dark path of collection now.
Yeah, once it begins.
Yeah. That's it. Anyway, what about you, Drisk?
Yeah, well, for me, I played it around friends' houses, but I didn't have much exposure to the Master System coming at it quite late in the day because my parents would never gave much sort of stock with the idea of consoles. They always thought, you know, computers were educational. Yeah. So I'd never really had the consoles at home. Did play it, I've got fond memories playing it around friends' houses. But when I started uni, sort of tail end of uni, I started collecting up consoles, and that's when I sort of discovered, you know, what a fantastic system it really is, isn't it? The range of sort of games on it and real sort of classic games that you just don't get anywhere else. But the thing I particularly love with the Master System is that look. It just screams 80s, doesn't it, with that sort of like the red triangle, as you say, it's like a Star Trek control panel.
Yeah,
isn't it? It's sort of trapezoid shape.
It's like,
and it's
a very low sloped pyramid.
But I just love it. I think that's just so gorgeous.
Yeah.
You know, I still think it's like one of the best looking consoles. For me, at least.
It's probably my favourite. It's probably my favourite, like, console design. Definitely right up there. I like the look of the Mega Drive as well. The original Mega Drive, the first one. But I think the Master System's just something special about it.
But, you know, because of all of that, really, I mean, although I'd sort of played quite a few, I did a lot of research for this episode, and I've been playing an awful lot of Master System games for probably about almost a month now, you know, quite solidly.
Yeah.
And I've fallen in love even more with it. There's just so many great games that, and that's part of the reason why I love doing these podcasts, because, you know, it sort of forces you to discover so many games that you perhaps would have passed you by.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so it's really cool. So shall I go into telling a bit of the history of the Sega Master System and what have you?
Tell us a bit of the history about the Sega Master System, Paul.
Educate us.
Yeah.
Try and say it with more enthusiasm, Steve.
Paul, please tell us a bit more about the history of the Sega Master System.
Well, I suppose the story really starts with the SG-1000, because the Sega Master System, as I'm sure many of our listeners know, was actually the Mark III, the SG Mark III, you know. So it went through many iterations, but it was released in 1983 for 15,000 yen. And I don't know if you've seen the console. It's completely different. It's sort of like a white design console. And, all of this sort of came about because Sega, people forget this, but back in the early 80s, Sega was really struggling because they weren't getting particularly good arcade games coming at the time. There were still things like the early Monaco GP, and not the one that everyone remembers, and Turbo and things like that. But there was an awful lot of dross that they were releasing. And this is the time when they're going through where they were owned by Sega, Golf and Western, and they were sold off the existing arcade division to Bally Manufacturing. So Sega really were sort of struggling. They had an R&D department. We had the arcade, the crash was going on, you know, at this sort of time, around this time. So they realised that perhaps they need to leave the arcade market and look to also concentrate on doing sort of like the home console market in sort of tandem, at least, with the arcades. And that's where they, you know, they decided to go and do this machine. So, but you can imagine, I do feel sorry for them, because they create this machine, they must have been chuffed, released on July the 5th, 1983, 15,000 yen. Unfortunately, on the same, I think it was the same day even, another console was released in Japan for slightly cheaper, of 14,800 yen. And that was the Nintendo Famicom. So, you know, I mean, the as everyone knows, particularly against the SG-1000, the Nintendo Famicom was, you know, a much better machine than the SG-1000. And they had things like Donkey Kong and Donkey Kong Jr. and Popeye, you know, on the Famicom as launch titles. And Sega on the SG-1000 only had, like, Borderline and really basic overhead sort of shooter and a sort of like Dig Dug, where you control a Jeep. It was no contest, anyway. It was a big flop. The SG-1000 was a huge flop in Japan.
So I take it the SG-1000's got not even similar specs to the Master System?
No, no. The only time it gets similar is their third attempt.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, so anyway, Sega being Sega, they come back, they do the Mark II, the SG-1000 Mark II. Again, it's like 15,000. It's got a few hardware tweaks, you know, to sort of, I think they moved the controllers to the front, which is a bit more sensible. Again, it was another flop. You know, they just didn't have the hardware to compete with the Famicom. Had some okay games like Lode Runner and things on the Mark II, but, you know, still no joy, really. Now, you've got to admire Sega. You would think after two failed attempts, they would probably say, let's give up, guys.
Yeah.
But they didn't. They released the Mark III of the SG-1000 in October the 20th, 1985. Now, this time, the R&D department for the arcades was starting to produce some classic games. So this is the point when they were able to release Hang-On on the Mark III. And the Mark III is pretty much a Master System in all but the design. Still, it's sort of like a white, sort of stylized design to it. Doesn't look like the Master System, but pretty much under the hood it's the same thing. And of course, we mentioned with Hang-On, one of the things again with the SG-1000 Mark III is that you had My Cards. They were sort of like, as well as cartridges, you had games placed on little credit card size cards that you could plug in, which of course the Master System could also take. I must admit, I've never had one, but I'd love to sort of try that, because it's quite cool, isn't it, having it on a card. Mm. But I suppose, shall we talk about with Hang-On? I mean, Steve, what was your views on Hang-On? Because you obviously sounded like it was your only game back in the day.
I loved Hang-On for a week.
Yeah.
And then, like, obviously, when I first booted it up, the graphics were nice on it. It was fast. It was good 3D. My C64 wasn't particularly brilliant at 3D games, as has been covered in other podcasts, where I didn't lose that podcast, but anyway. And, yeah, so this was like a bit of a breath of fresh air. It was a little bit like getting a bit of an arcade game at home, because it was really fast and it was, you know, it was good controls. And it was the first time I started playing using a flat controller instead of a joystick.
Yes.
So, yeah, I loved it for like I say, about a week. And then there was definitely a proper yearning for something else. You know, what else can this do? And I want something else to play now. I want a fighting game or a shooting game or something else.
To be fair, though, that's like with any game, isn't it? After, you know, like, you know, not to have too many.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, if that's all you've got and you're playing it solidly, you will get tired of it.
Yeah, and I think looking back, I mean, as a pack-in for the console, it's not bad. But it's certainly not. When you look later on, when they started packing in things like Sonic the Hedgehog, with the Mega Drive and stuff, and what they were packing in them was like system sellers, like absolute classic game. Like this is gonna shift thousands of consoles, like by packing in Sonic the Hedgehog. Whereas it seemed more with the Master System, it was just like a bonus. Yeah, I've got a game to play on it, you know. But yeah, not a bad start. Not a bad start.
Yeah. And what's your view on it, Ali? You quite like it? Or?
I think. I didn't play it that much, to be honest. I don't think it was. I can't remember. Was it? It must have been. It must have been the built-in game on my version of it. Was it?
It was a BIOS game on.
I'm trying to think that, because there's been a number of different built-in games, haven't there? And I don't.
Yeah, I mean, we'll cover that in a bit. But yeah, I mean, you had. I
can't remember. Was Wonder Boy ever built into the original?
No,
one?
Alex
Kidd was
sorry.
Built into the original one, was it? Because I know it's built into the Master System 2. So I must have.
No, it's built in the Master System 2. No, pretty much you had.
Safari Hunt.
What
was it?
Yeah,
if you had the action pack with the light phaser, then you had Safari Hunt and Hang On. So I must have had Hang On in mind, mustn't I?
So let me just explain for guys who think, what the hell are we going on about here? basically, and this is a useful tip if people pick up a Master System, built on pretty much every single Master System in the BIOS was a free game in most cases. So it's a useful tip that if you're buying a Master System, you know that you're getting a game for free, in effect. So, I mean, the first one you had was Snail Maze, which, as Steve said, wasn't much cop. I think you had to bring it up, was it? You pressed both buttons and was it? You kept on hitting up, or you
something like
up.
That. Yeah, I'm gonna work.
Yeah,
it out.
I must admit, I tried for the nature of the podcast to try that on my one, and I couldn't get it working. But I'm sure people will be screaming at us what it actually was. But it's not too bad, as it's sort of like an overhead maze, simple sort of game thing. So that was like the first thing that you got with the Master System. Then you had. The Hang On and Safari Hunt, which came with a light phaser. That was the light phaser pack. Then you had Hang On just on its own, which is one I've got. And then you had things like Missile Defense 3D with the that's quite a rare one because that would have been the pack in with the 3D glasses, which we'll come to, and the light phaser. Mm-hmm. The pack. And then I think on the Master System 2, that's when you had Alex Kidd. Miracle World, and then of course Sonic the Hedgehog,
and then latterly Sonic.
But back to the Hang On game on the Mark III, because I've been playing, you know, the Hang On. You know, it's quite a cute game, as you say. It runs really smooth,
yeah.
Doesn't it? The only thing is, it's got to be the most explosive bike.
Oh, you touch anything.
You touch anything, and you just explode. I mean, it's not just you slow down, is it? I mean, I think if you're going at like a snail's pace, you know, you won't explode, but pretty much anything else will cause a fireball. And yeah, so it does get a bit frustrating with that.
Have you noticed that it's kind of got its own little built-in autopilot as well?
No, I haven't.
So like, if you're bombing down the road and then you hit one of the bends, so you turn right or whatever, and you push right on the joypad. But if you stop pressing right on the joypad, he stays leaned right until that road stops going right.
Oh, so you have to turn the other way?
No, when the road straightens up, he'll just pop back up. No, he doesn't do anything. It will stay leaning. He won't move across the road left and right. He'll just stay where he is. But he will stay leaning over to the right because the road's going right by himself.
Ah, so also I have to see with that. But no, I mean, I had quite a bit of fun with it. It's frustrating, and I can see why you got bored of it after a week solid play, but it's quite good fun. And you know, considering, you know, this is like a launch title for the Mark III in 1985, it's pretty impressive.
Absolutely,
really.
It's a decent freebie, isn't it? You can't complain.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And of course, it was a huge sort of arcade hit back in the day. So you know, a lot of people would be salivating at the time, you know, for things like Hang On. The other launch title for the Mark III is absolutely a crazy game called Teddy Boy Blues.
Never even heard of it.
And I saw this in the retro game shop near me locally, because they've had loads of Master System games come in. And I was like, oh, I really want this, because I had so much fun with this game. You play a gun-toting kid, and you have to kill all the ninjas. And it's sort of like a... It's really bizarre. There's like a bonus level, and the things you're picking up isn't like fruit and healthy things. It's things like beer and cigarettes. I mean, talk about a different era.
Bizarre.
But it is. I had so much fun with it. It's just such a pure sort of. You know, there's not a lot to it. You're just literally sort of. There's dice dotted around, and you that tells you how many. Enemies are going to come out, so if it says six, you know there's six enemies, and you just run around and sort of pretty much you just shoot everybody, and then you'll get on to the next level.
I'm just looking at it now, it's mental.
Yeah, it is. It's totally mental, and it's. But I just love those sort of, you know, where, and I suppose that's why we all love retro gaming, isn't it? Because they sort of boil down games to their pure gaming experience where it's just all about fun.
Yeah, well,
there's no story, you know, 5 minutes of like craziness and you're good to go.
Yeah, it almost reminds me of like a scrolling version of it. Is it Super Crate Box, Super Bread Bin as well on the Commodore 64, which is just like run around, shoot everything quickly as fast as you can.
Yeah, no, I've played that on the. It's similar to that, isn't it? It's that sort of level of
mad
sort of craziness. Yeah, and you know, when you shoot the enemies, they sort of like, well, they drop pellets or they sort of disappear and become pellets. I don't know what those pellets are.
Oh.
whether it's, but yeah, you have to sort of pick them up, else they sort of like turn into big snarling balls with teeth. Yeah, absolutely mad game. But honestly, if you love your like frantic shooters and you love a bit of just pure craziness, it's a great game.
Looks like fun.
Yeah, wonderful launch title. So you can see, like, you know, I mean, remember, this was on the Mark III. Obviously, they came out on the Master System as well, because they're pretty much exactly the same machines. Yeah, and I suppose the only other one to mention in 1985 was Ninja. Now, this was a huge hit in the West when it came out. I think probably a year later. One of the things to be aware of on the Mark III, because obviously we're still sort of talking the Japanese release, the graphics are totally different from the one that we remember in the West. In Japan, on the original Mark III, it was all cartoon graphics, and then they sort of made it realistic when we came to play it. But
I'm surprised it was even allowed in this country, being a ninja, after all.
I know.
Because ninjas are such bad things.
Yeah, yeah.
I think this was before the ninja craze had sort of taken over, and they were worried for our souls, weren't they?
that game's rock hard.
It is, isn't it?
Rock hard.
I mean, for those who don't know, well, Ali, do you want to explain it?
I've only played it kind of recently. I mean, I didn't play it today. I saw it in the pile and kind of went, meh. I've got memories of that game, and I know why I'm not going to play it. And I couldn't get past like the first, 30 seconds, minute of the game, I don't think, just because of, it's just really, really frustrating. maybe it's just me, I don't know, but no.
Well, for those who don't know, it's sort of like an overhead, isn't it? And you're a very bright colour. So that's one of the things that's wonderful with the Master System, is that beautiful bright colour palette. And you're just sort of throwing basically morning stars, aren't you? Shurikens. Pretty much everybody in all directions. So it's kind of like like Commando, isn't it?
That's exactly what I was going to say. Think of Commando on the Commodore 64, and replace it with a ninja throwing stars at very acute angles. People coming at you at acute angles, and that's basically what it is.
But, you know, I know a lot of people that have a soft spot for this game, and I can sort of see why. It's, you know, it's, there's a lot of variety to it, and it's, it's, as you say, it's rock hard, but it's, it's a lot of fun. And this is one that you could pick up cheap as chips, because I think everybody pretty much had Ninja, or it was certainly a very popular game.
Oh, it was part of that initial batch of games, wasn't it, which are now a bit infamous for their box art.
with that sort of classic grid look, wasn't it,
with the very kind of basic drawings of the, you know, whatever the graphic kind of was. It wasn't one of the worst ones, but it's one of the most basic ones. It's certainly recognizable. Yeah. It's very common, as you say.
So at this point, of course, we're, you know, in 1985, the Sega Master System hadn't been released. This was, of course, all the Mark III. So Sega still weren't making a dent, even with those sort of games, because, you know, the country was Famicom crazy, and they realized that they want, you know, if they were going to make any dent, they had to look elsewhere. And they launched the Sega Master System, completely redesigning it, giving that cool name, the Sega Master System, as opposed to Mark III. So a much cooler name. And that design that we were discussing, you know, that sort of trapezoid, sort of beautiful shape, screams 80s, doesn't it? Looks absolutely gorgeous, that they sort of had designed. And they finally released it in June 1986. And, beautiful, beautiful machine. And also, round about the same time, well, a little bit later, they also came out with a light phaser pack with the Sega Master System as well.
Mm-hmm.
And packing game, you had Hang On, and another game for the light phaser called Safari Hunt. Have you guys ever played it, Safari Hunt?
Yeah, I think I played this on my mates. This is like the Sega's equivalent of Duck Hunt, isn't it?
It is, but a nice. It's got a nice range, isn't it, of different creatures to shoot.
Yeah.
So you're not just shooting ducks as a whole sort of like
politically incorrect
menagerie of things to shoot. creatures. Yeah, exactly. it's a lot of fun. I quite like this one. Have you played it, Ali, at all or not?
Yeah, I mean, I think I must have had the action pack when I was younger. I don't remember having it, but I definitely remember playing Safari Hunt. So and the gun is very familiar to me since I've you know re-got one for the second time. So yeah, I must have had it. And yeah, no, I liked it. It was quite fun. I used to love the gimmick of light guns back in the day. So anything with a light gun, I always kind of like, you know, really enjoyed playing the games of. Yeah, and a lot of variety of things to shoot.
Sorry.
I don't think I always recognised what they were exactly, but yeah, lots of different.
Just shoot whatever.
Yeah, it moves. I will get it.
But you used to say it's a lot of fun. And I mean, let's talk about that light phaser, because they didn't like calling it light gun, wasn't it? I mean, that light phaser, the design of it is absolutely gorgeous. It really looks so futuristic, doesn't it, with all the sort of design and the way it hangs over your hand.
Yeah, absolutely. Sort of it looks like something that could be in Tron or something.
Well, actually, what Sega did, they did a deal with an anime company called Tatsunoko Productions.
Oh, yeah.
And they basically said, look, we're coming out with this sort of gun, sort of design us a gun or let us use it. I don't know the exact deals, but they basically did a deal saying, come out with a anime series that advertises the gun, and you know, we'll design it to look like the anime gun. For those who don't know, and I'll put it in the show notes, it was called Zillion, which is a game that we will come to because it's like one of the best games on the Master System. But the actual anime show is awesome. It is brilliant. And in the anime, even Opa Opa, which is another game we'll come to, which is Fantasy Zone, the little ship also appears as a character occasionally. It's well worth watching. Somebody's done like a whole playlist of all the episodes on YouTube, so I will put that in the show notes for those who want to see it. But it's a big advert for the gun.
the company Tatsunoko did Battle of the Planets, didn't they?
Yes, I think they did, yes.
Yeah, I still love that cartoon.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you get an idea, it's a good quality anime, and I still enjoy watching it. Let's go on to the following year of 1986, and one of the games that came out, again, remember this is even before the UK had seen the Master System, but it was a absolute classic of a game, Astro Warrior. Have any of you guys played this game?
No, I haven't heard of this one.
Ah, now this is another I saw in the local game shop, and I was like, I've really got to buy this. I got them to put it behind with this one because I said, you've got to reserve it for me. Have you ever played it, Ali, at all?
I haven't. I don't think I've ever seen it ever. Is it a rare one?
Well, they had it for £12 in the local game shop, and that was like a double pack with another game, which the name escapes me. But just to explain what the game is, it's an overhead vertical shooter, very old school, looks very basic, but it's one of the most playable shooters, and this is one of the key things, because I've been sort of playing a lot of these games, you know, to get an idea, and I probably spent probably about two nights on just this game. I had so much fun with it. It's definitely up there with one of my favourite shooters, and I highly recommend anybody to give it a go.
Do you know what? I've just caught up. I'm using Steve's tactic here. Just caught up on eBay with it, and I'm sure I've got that. I have definitely played that game, or it's very similar to something I've played recently.
Well, it depends. You know, it depends on the sort of games you like. But if you love your shooters,
I do love my shooters.
I mean, I'm sing it enough for it.
I'm having a quick look at it now. It looks great, actually. It's kind of like a Xevious, isn't it, or a Slap Fight?
Slap Fight, I think, is what it reminded me of on the. C64, was it, Slap Fight?
Yeah. But it looks solid, doesn't it? It looks like a really tight, fast-paced, responsive shooter. Yeah. I really like the look of it. Yeah, I'm going to give this a go.
And really nice music as well.
It's giving you all the necessities without the need to have loads of background and stuff, isn't it? It's just saying, look, here's the game, this is all you need. Off you go.
And yeah, it looks pure. Like, pure and simple, isn't it?
The playability just looks amazing.
Yeah. I'm in.
So definitely give this one a go. It's definitely one that I recommend. And then, of course, in 86, there was a new character came onto the scene, which was, of course, Sega's new mascot of Alex Kidd. And in his first game, Alex Kidd in Miracle World. I'm sure you guys have played the first Alex Kidd.
Yeah, I've played it. I'm not a fan.
You're not a fan. It's rock hard, isn't it?
How do you get away from the little death thing when it appears? Is there a way that you get away from that, or does it just kill you every time?
You just leg it.
is that what it is? If you get off the screen, he disappears. Is that how you do it? Because
that's pretty much it. Yeah. Yeah, you just sort of drop down. Forget about collecting all. Basically, for those who don't know, it's sort of like it's a platformer. You play like this weird guy with big ears. If you've never seen Alex Kidd, he's got sort of got big ears on the side and a dodgy haircut, and he can punch, can't he? He can sort of like he has a special. I think it's like haiku punch where he can actually break rocks. So it's good fun, but it's absolutely rock hard, and there's no continues. I think I've heard again on the wonder of the internet there is a cheat to allow continues, but when I've tried it, it didn't work on my version, at least, because I think you basically press up when you're on the game over screen. You press up and bash all the button, and then you should get another continue. But that didn't work for me. But maybe it works for other versions out there, possibly on the Master System 2 version that was in the BIOS. But it's I'm probably the same as you in that it's a favourite of a lot of people. It's got great music. I sort of love the palette, as we sort of mentioned before, because the Sega Master System has such a vibrant colour palette, doesn't it? Compared to,
definitely,
particularly when you compare it to the NES or any system of the day, it screams sort of like that fuzzy nostalgia feeling, isn't it? Because you've got those strong sort of like Sega blues and it just makes you smile from ear to ear, isn't it? When you're sort of playing any Master System game, really.
Yeah, definitely. Vibrant.
While I'm not a fan of that, I do like Alex Kidd in Shinobi World, which is a lot later.
That is brilliant. 1990. Yeah, I think that's the best in the series. Yeah.
Then there's also Alex Kidd in High Tech World, is it?
Yeah. We'll come to these sort of later, but you got Alex Kidd in The Lost Stars. That was the second one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Then you had High Tech World, which was awful. And then you had Shinobi World, which was brilliant. So there was also a Japanese one with which is like a BMX trial one, I think it's called. Alex Kidd, he's on a BMX, but I've never been able to sort of ever get that working properly, because it came with like a dial controller in Japan.
Oh, okay.
For like Arkanoid and things, and I think it uses that, so I never was able to get it working when I was trying.
Is he meant to look like Monkey off the TV series? Remember Monkey?
He does a bit, doesn't he? He does kind of look like him. I don't know, he's a quite a weird character,
yeah,
really, isn't he?
He does look Monkey.
I thought it was Gary Lineker.
And him.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. Cross between the two.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, for Sega, though, this really was their attempt at competing with Mario, wasn't it, in terms of having a mascot. Alex Kidd was the mascot for Sega up until a certain Blue Hedgehog came along.
Yeah, definitely.
He was their mascot that they definitely tried to push. But I'm the same as you. I'm not too much of a fan of Alex Kidd, mainly because it's a really tough game and I'm a gaming wimp when it comes to super toughness. Another classic that came out in 86 was, of course, Wonder Boy, which people from the Nintendo side of things will know this as Adventure Island, and it's a real sort of platform, pure platforming as they come, isn't it, with Wonder Boy? I don't know if you guys remember it. You're sort of running left to right, and you just have to jump at the right time.
Yeah.
With the first Wonder Boy, of course, they went on to be vastly different games and much better games as it went on. But the first one is It's got lovely music, and again, it's a bit like with the, you know, sort of like Astro Warrior. It's that purity that you know, and like with Telly Boy and things like that. It's that purity of the gameplay that it's just simple fun. And one thing that's nice with Wonder Boy, you've got like checkpoints. Every time you go past the sign, when you die, you will start at that checkpoint. So at least it's not too frustrating with this one. In fact, you know, some people find it quite easy.
Not to forget the skateboard.
Oh, and of course, yeah, the skateboard was, yeah, seeing him there, that was typical, wasn't it, of the era, trying to sort of like throw skateboards wherever they could.
Make it cool.
Because they were there, make it cool, yeah. But yeah, no, good game. I mean, you guys have fond memories with this one, or did you never play it much?
I remember this to me is a game I remember more for having on my Game Gear, which we can talk about the linkages between the two later. But I had it as the packing game on the Game Gear, so I remember playing it on that, not really the Master System as such.
I bet it worked quite well on the Game Gear, did it?
Yeah, it did actually. It was quite good on the Game Gear. The Game Gear's was quite a good piece of kit back in the day, which of course was more or less a Master System. But I'm sure we'll talk about that later. But yeah, it was a decent game. Quite liked it.
Yeah, simple fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Simple fun. Yeah, the skateboard and you know jump. I always used to hit the rock though, which was very annoying.
He used to do that tripping motion, didn't he?
Yeah, that was annoying. Jumping up, there's always a bit of fruit you couldn't quite get, and I couldn't never work out how you could actually get that certain little bit. But it was a real fun game.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, then we come to the following year, and this is the important year for us in Europe, which is 1987, because that's when the Master System finally came to our shores. Over here, and it was a pretty solid price, really, a good price of $99.95. That was the launch price. It was certainly a bargain now. I suppose that was still quite a bit of money. I'm sure that made more than a few parents wince when they bought it for both of you at Christmas. And of course, one of the reasons that they were so successful in Europe with the Sega Master System was sort of two-tier thing. One, Nintendo had pretty much, well, either had no interest or had sort of mucked up with their sort of deals with trying to get the Nintendo console out in the UK. It wasn't being sold particularly well in Europe, and their focus wasn't there. Whereas Sega did a deal with Mastertronic, which of course we all know from the budget label Mastertronic.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It was of course so huge on the Commodore 64 and Spectrum and Amstrad and what have you. And of course that was a masterstroke for Sega to do that, because Mastertronic had all the deals in the UK with Toys R Us, Woolworths and all the distribution chains. So of course they were brilliant with their promotional skills as well. So I mean, Mastertronic did a fantastic job, you know, selling the sort of the console. You know, in Europe, the Sega Master System sold, you know, 6.8 million in Europe alone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you look at the Nintendo, and I think this is really important to realise, in Europe, based on the Game Over David Sheff book, Nintendo only sold 3.5 million NES consoles. So, whereas, you know, in American things and Japan, Master System was seen as pretty much a flop. In Europe, they actually sold almost double the number of consoles to the NES. So it was a complete reversal in Europe of, you know, with the consoles. They really did win that region. And I think largely that was in thanks to Mastertronic.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that was evident in my base of friends as well. I knew multiple people that had Master Systems, etc., and I knew one friend that had a NES.
Yeah, and I mean that's really where sort of Sega would thrive. You know, all the places that the NES hadn't sold particularly well because they hadn't either bothered or got other people to sell, distribute it, and they hadn't done a particular job. But, you know, because the Master System was huge in sort of places like Africa, South America in particular, like Brazil.
Brazil, Brazilians huge. Love it, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, Brazil is I think, well, we'll come to this with Tech Toy.
Yeah.
I mean, they were still releasing games right up until something like 2005, I think it was. It was some ridiculous sort of time. But, you know, they were huge in the regions. And I think particularly often when people cover the Master System that I've seen, it's usually been in America, and they're always talking about this flop of a system and not many people had it. Yes, that was true in America, but pretty much a large chunks of the globe, the Master System was a winning console, and that's, you know, important to realise.
Yeah, no, definitely.
But it wasn't a particularly good start for Sega, because they obviously, you know, needed to get the console there for Christmas, and I think they didn't get it there until Boxing Day, the initial sales. So I think on the first year, there was a lot of upset with retailers. From what I was reading, obviously I don't remember it back in the day. I probably was a bit too young to remember it. Well, I like to think I was too young. but yeah, there was a bit of a blunder on Sega's part. But Mastertronic still managed to sort of pick up the pace as they continued to launch it from, you know, beyond 87 and into 88. And of course, we had that wonderful ad campaign that they did with the, as Steve remembered earlier, with the "Do me a favour, plug me into a Sega." I'll just play a clip of that so people can remember it as well. Sure. See what you guys think.
Oh, isn't life dull?
What we need is a Sega. That's a games console. Plug me in a thing will really liven up. You can get loads of Sega games like Outrun, Double Ball Dragon, Shinobi,
Ghostbusters, and the graphics. Well,
and you can buy extra bits like these.
3D.
Oh, you look
weird.
Okay, do us a favor. Plug me into a Sega.
Now whack on the patches and I'll get back to sleep.
So anyway, I hope you enjoyed that. As I say, it's such a classic advert. And, you know, Mastertronic did such a good job in the UK that Sega quite quickly gave them Europe as well. And they went off and became the distributors for the whole of Europe. And then, of course, Mastertronic would sell to Virgin and in 1988. And, of course, then Virgin would continue selling until, as we perhaps know, or many will know, when Virgin sold it back to Sega, and, you know, the people who had worked with Mastertronic and Virgin became Sega of Europe. So, you know, there's a real sort of connection in the UK with sort of classic companies like Mastertronic and Virgin that with Sega, and, you know, it's wonderful that they became Sega of Europe. But onto the launch titles, again, it was quite a nice sort of collection of titles. One of the first ones was Action Fighter. Do you guys remember that? It was sort of like a Spy Hunter clone.
Yeah, I've got this. I got this the other day for 50 pence.
50p, was that the car boot sale?
There's a...
I never get deals like that. How do you get deals?
I live in Liverpool.
I love you guys, but I hate both of you guys. How you get these deals?
Yeah, no, there's a computer shop in Liverpool called Level Up, and I went in and they just had loads of loose carts. It was like 50p, a pound, £2, and that one was 50 pence, so I picked it up.
What do you think? Because I had a lot of fun with this when I was playing it.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. I mean, it's quite repetitive, isn't it? It doesn't vary much.
Yeah, I suppose.
But for what it is, it's like it's essentially a Spy Hunter, like you just said. It's good fun.
But it's more than that, isn't it? Because you start off with a weedy bike, don't you?
Yeah.
And then you collect sort of, every time you sort of blow up vehicles, it creates a letter of the alphabet, isn't it? So you start with A, and if you collect it, you get through to E.
Yeah.
And then your weedy bike turns into a cool Spy Hunter car with double the firepower.
Yeah.
And then you collect three more letters, and suddenly it turns into like a vertical shooter. Yeah. So as you say, I mean, beyond that, you don't turn into any other item. But it's had quite a lot of fun with it. I think it's quite a good little take on Spy Hunter. I mean, Ali, what was your take on the game? Have you played this one?
Yeah, it's very reminiscent of Spy Hunter, isn't it? Because you even go into the back of the lorry and stuff like that. And I was a big fan of Spy Hunter on the arcade. So, I like this game. I liked it because it was different as well, as you say. First off, you start as a bike, and then you turn into the car, and then you know your next power up is you grow wings, and it turns into a shooter. So it's a decent little game, and it's one that you can pick up really cheaply on the Master System. So yeah, definitely one that people should check out if they don't have it in their collection already.
Although I do wonder if you are supposed to be the hero in the game, because, you know, even shooting like ambulances and things like that gives you the letters.
They're all bad ambulances.
Ah, that's why. Yeah, they're all bad. No, but as you say, there's not. I mean, it's one of those games. It's not going to hold your attention for too long, but it's great fun. And I'm so jealous, Steve, that you picked it up for 50p. But another launch title, and this one I absolutely adore, is Black Belt. Have you ever played this one? Oh, this is another one that's in the game shop right now, and I was had it in my little podgy paws, and I was like, I really want this. It's basically Kung Fu Master sort of clone.
Oh, nice.
So it's sort of scrolling, you know, kicking. But even better than that, you get sub bosses and you get a final boss. So interspersed. So it's a bit like Kung Fu Master, where you're just sort of like, you know, scrolling, kick everybody.
Yeah.
And then you end up with a sort of one-on-one IR Kung Fu style. You get like a sub boss.
Nice.
You know, so sort of like they'll have like a weapon and things. And then you get a little bit further and you get to like the final boss on a level. And it's almost like a very simple, I'd say simple sort of almost Street Fighter type game. Obviously small sprites.
Yeah.
But it's just so addictive. This was another one that I probably lost a couple of days to, where I should have been sort of like rushing through all these games. I just had so much fun with it. It's really good. Have you ever played it, Ali?
Yeah, I've played it, and I didn't play it originally back in the day. I played it, I don't know, quite a few months ago, I think it was. And the thing that struck me was, how did they get that big German bald-headed guy with the moustache to appear in it from Indiana Jones? That's what I thought, because I think 90% of the bad guys you fight are that guy.
Yes, yeah.
One interesting thing there is, I'm looking at it on YouTube now, is like every time you kill someone, they explode into pieces.
Oh, yes,
very
that's
weird.
Right. Yeah.
At least they don't fall off the screen, though.
True. Yeah.
But, I mean, we've talked about two games in the sort of like UK lineup, and they're awesome games. And that's even before we get to the third sort of lineup game, which was, of course, Fantasy Zone.
Crazy shoot 'em up.
Crazy shoot 'em up. I mean, if people haven't played it, it's sort of like, it's probably got to go down as one of the brightest coloured shooters.
Yeah.
You're sort of hit with a kaleidoscope of colour.
Psychedelic, nearly, isn't it?
Oh, it is. Yeah, the Fantasy Zone. I mean, for those who don't know, you play a little ship called Opa Opa, or Opa. Is it Opa Opa or Opa Opa? Yeah, Opa Opa, I think it's called. He's called a little ship, a cute little ship with little wings, and you fly around, and you have to shoot the bases, don't you?
Yeah.
And dodge all, well, shoot the enemies, and you basically have to go around and destroy all the bases, and once you've destroyed everything, you're able to progress. And
okay.
That was something that.
That's what you have to do then.
Well, I was exactly the same as you, Ali. When I first, you know, years ago, when I sort of like, you know, perhaps played it, sort of stumbled across it, perhaps on emulators, I was like flying around shooting all the enemies, and I was like, why do people see this as a classic? And then sort of put it down and went on to other things. And for the podcast, I thought, no, I'm going to sit down, try and work out with this game. And, you know, watched a few, you know, YouTube videos and thought, that's what you do. And once you understand what you're supposed to do, it's actually really, really good fun. But by God, it's a hard game.
Yeah, I was playing this today, funny enough. I didn't find it the most easiest games, to be honest with you. I mean, I was a bit getting lost going, because it's one of those games that allows you to scroll to the left and to the right quite freely, doesn't it? A bit like Defender-ish, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
it sort of loops round, doesn't it?
Yeah, so exactly. And I was a bit kind of lost.
The other side.
Yeah, I was a bit lost as which way to go, and then I'd go that way for a little while, then go back that way, then I'd shoot this thing, and then I'd get shot by something or fly into something quite quickly.
Yeah, and that's one of the things a bit annoying with it, really, because you can only take one hit.
Exactly.
And that's what makes it so challenging. You know, one mistake and then that's it. You sort of like explode. But then I suppose you do get the shop where you can sort of like upgrade your ship, which is quite cool. I can see why that people have a lot of love for it. I think the sequel is probably better, which we'll come to. But I mean, because the sequels are a little bit easier. Still rock hard, but a little bit easier than the original. Namely, because you have like an energy bar, I believe, in the sequel. Yeah, platinum hard game. But if you love your shooters, yeah, give it a go. just don't be fooled by the cute graphics because it's platinum hard. I mean, other games that came out, well, we mentioned Hang On, obviously, that of course got a UK release. But there was also another game called Transbot. Have you ever sort of played that? It's a cute little sort of Transformer shooter.
No, I mean, I'm just looking it up now, but no, I don't even remember hearing about this one.
Yeah, I mean, again, I've seen this in the local retro game shop, and it's quite a cute little shooter, really. You sort of, it's what Transformers should have been on the home consoles. If they did this as a straight shooter, it would have been awesome. You start off as a normal ship, shooting everything, simple sort of horizontal shooter, but when you pick up certain power-ups, you can actually turn yourself into sometimes you get like different, but you actually can, with one of the power-ups, turn yourself into a robot.
Oh, okay.
And then you get like a super gun. It's one that, I'll be honest, I didn't know back in the day. I played it for the podcast and I had quite a bit of fun with it, but I'll be honest, I probably don't know all the nuances with it. It was one of those sort of, you know, I gave a bit of time and quite enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at it now. It's another one that does the parallax scrolling, which is quite cool. I didn't realise that the Master System did parallax. Remember, I first started seeing it on the Amiga. That was like 16-bit era when I really started to notice parallax, and it became a word that I knew. But yeah, it looks quite good.
Yeah, it's quite a nice little... Quite a nice little game, really.
Yeah. It's a decent little fun game, apart from the fact that they do rip off the AT-ST from Star Wars in it at some point. I don't know if you got to that.
This is the 80s. Everybody was ripping off everybody. Yeah. Copyright? What's copyright?
But yeah, you're right. It's a fun little game. When you turn into the robot, you like fire. But I don't know what it is. It's like looks like a big stick and a laser or something, but like a wall of laser.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, no, it's a nice obscure little shooter for people to give a try. And another game that came out was World Grand Prix. This might be the one that you were thinking of earlier. Do you remember this game at all, guys?
World Grand Prix. I don't think I've ever played it, to be fair.
Well, I mean, if you love your pole position, it's very much like Pole Position, but it's probably better in a lot of ways. It looks absolutely fantastic, but it suffers from the Hang-On scenario where you're driving a bomb, it seems. So the slightest touch and you just absolutely explode into into debris, and then magically, like, your car's back again and you carry on.
It looks very similar to a lot of other racing games at the time, doesn't it, with the kind of red and white kind of checkered perimeter of the track and the kind of green distance in the background that moves across the screen. It's very, very similar.
It is, but one of the things that's cool about World Grand Prix, considering, you know, how old it is, I mean, there's 12 tracks based very loosely on Formula One tracks, but it also had a track editor in it well. And it's really easy to, you could draw out a track and then just race it. And I just thought that's so cool. And I had not seen that personally until, like, as you say, on the Amiga. I think it was with Lotus 3. So to see such an old game sort of have a track editor.
Yeah, it's a nice touch.
Nice touch. Yeah, really, really good.
It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, it does look very much like our Pole Position. And it looks to me like that Sega seems to have a lot of games that, like, mimicked the games at the time. So they've got their own, sort of, like you say, Pole Position there. They had the other one that was a bit like Kung Fu Master. Yeah, it seems like they had their own versions of stuff.
And in a lot of cases, you know, particularly if you compare it to the NES, you know, things like with Black Belt, I think that's far superior to Kung Fu, that was, like, a big game on the NES.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so often they were superior, in my opinion, to a lot of the equivalents on the NES or even on the home consoles, home computers.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, I mean, Sega's have always been masters of doing great games, haven't they, really?
Mm-hmm.
Sega challenges you with Afterburner, a game so exciting you can imagine you're in for the fight of your life. Game accessories sold separately.
Get ready.
Afterburner gives you the real dogfight excitement of the arcade version.
Yeah.
Like barrel rolls, nose dives, supersonic speed, and radar lock-ons.
Your turn to burn. Let's take it home.
Afterburner. Only on the Sega system. Sega. The challenge will always be there.
Another game that I just want to sort of squeeze in, because it's one that I think is awesome, is Enduro Racer. Have you ever played?
Is Enduro the one we did the wheelies?
Yeah, Enduro. Well, Enduro Racer in the arcade was from behind. It was sort of like a sort of dirt bike version.
Yeah, with the jumps.
Hang on, yeah.
Pull the handlebars
but
back.
Rather sensibly, on the Master System, they decided we can't do that on the home console. So they turned it into an isometric racer, and it's really, really playable. It's one of those that gets sort of very repetitive, but it's just one of those sort of fun, simple racing games that's a lot of fun to play.
Nice. I mean, this was a cool game in the arcade. I do remember it. But I'm just having a quick look to have a look at the isometric version.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does work. It does work.
It does. I mean, I think it was quite smart of them to just redesign, you know, the game totally, but to still have that essence of the idea of what Enduro Racer was all about.
Yeah, and it looks fast and fun as well.
Yeah, it's definitely, it was one of those that I sort of had a lot of fun with.
It reminds me a little bit of Excitebike on the NES as well.
It's very similar to that, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah.
But of course isometric as opposed to from the side games.
By the way, when you hit water, you just very slowly sink down, 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 down.
Classic game. And then, of course, I mean, this shows you there's so many games in 87. It really was the peak of the Master System in a lot of ways. You have the sequel for Fantasy Zone 2 that we were mentioning, the Tears of Opa Opa. That really is a great shooter, because what it did, it took all that was great about the original but made it that little bit easier, you know, and it's what a sequel should be, where they've clearly looked at all that didn't work in the original and sort of made it work for the sequel. Have you ever sort of played the sequel at all?
I'm having a quick look now.
I've never played the sequel, no. I've only ever played the first one.
First one. Well, it's quite good. I mean, if you notice on the video, you've got like a power bar this time, which is thankfully.
Oh, yeah.
So you just get more chance of sort of surviving, but all the psychedelic brightness and craziness of the original. But there's nice variety and great bosses and everything.
It looks a little bit less twitchy as well, the main ship, because the first one looks incredibly fast and twitchy. And one thing I did notice as well is if you take your little ship down to the very bottom of the screen, he's got a pair of feet and he walks.
It's cute.
Yeah, just out of nowhere, a little pair of like little duck's feet just appear.
Well, as I say, it's quite cute seeing him in that, going back to the anime cartoon, Zillion.
Yeah.
Because you actually see him as, you know, well, I don't know, is it a he or she? The little ship pops up anyway in that as a character now and again, so it's quite cute.
I like that it's called the Tears of Opa Opa as well, as if there's some big backstory going on.
Yeah,
something
I know.
Tragic's happened to Opa Opa.
Yeah, the basic story is just, I'm sure there is a backstory. I don't know with a lot of them, because I have to admit, I had to play a lot of these. Thankfully, because of course I've got my Mega Drive Everdrive, I was able to play a lot of these Master Systems through my Mega Drive. That's how I played a lot of them, which was good. And the odd ones that didn't work, I had to sort of play on emulator.
So have you done that? Has the Mega Drive got a Sega Master System adapter or something?
Yeah, well, basically, and I didn't realise this until I got the Everdrive, The Mega Drive, you know, when you get the converter kit for the Mega Drive, it's basically all it is allowing the different carts to go in. Pretty much all the hardware that you need is in the Mega Drive itself.
Okay.
To run the Master System, it's pretty much got all the chips that you need. So it's brilliant. So, of course, with the Everdrive, it plays the Master System absolutely perfectly, and you can plug in even the Master System controller into the Mega Drive.
Wow.
So it's you know, if you haven't got a Master System, it's a great way of experiencing. The only thing I discovered, and this would be the same even if you had not the Everdrive, but the Master System converter, is some games really bizarrely just don't work properly. One of the Wonder Boy games, probably the second one, I think it was the second Wonder Boy game, for some reason when you start it up, he continually falls, where he falls and should land at the start, he's continually falling, and it just sort of loops. And there were other games like, I don't know, Alien Syndrome, where the controls, you're just suddenly walking in random directions. So it's still not exactly right with some of the games, but it's a great way if you've you know, if you don't want to buy a Master System but try and experience it. Retro Asylum would like to thank our donors this month. They are Sigma Data Solutions, Adam Tree, Darren Tungate, and Michael Keith. Your donations are so important to us. We all do this for free, but the running of the website and podcast hosting is surprisingly expensive. So every penny that you can donate us is greatly appreciated. Yeah, I mean, it's just, I don't know, you could go crazy with so many games in 87. I mean, I won't talk about Ghostbusters, although it's one of my favourite games on the Master System, because I talked about it quite extensively on a previous podcast, in movie podcasts that I did.
Yeah, I tried today, I didn't get it. Didn't get it at all.
You needed to be a kid when you played it.
Get it.
I'll have to show you all the tactics. You have to get the super trap, and I'll have to sit down and show you all the tactics of how to play it. I've played that game far too much.
Can I just test you guys on something? Because I'm surrounded by games at the moment. This is a game that came out in 1987. I just want to read you guys what it says on the back. I want to see if you can guess what game this is, because it wouldn't have been that obvious to me, to be honest with you. But here it goes. Okay?
Go on then.
Far away, there was a special land where peaceful dragons lived peaceful lives until the attack. Vicious creatures seeking final extinction for the dragons. You are their last hope. You are what?
Sonic the Hedgehog.
I
thought it was Wonder Boy, wasn't it?
Two words. It's an absolute classic arcade game by Sega.
Fantasy Zone?
Nope.
Altered Beast?
Nope.
You're
on the same lines though.
Again. Golden Axe?
No.
Right.
Space Harrier.
That's what I meant.
Because it's got dragons.
That's what I meant when I said Fantasy Zone. I meant Space Harrier. Oh, it was in my head. I said the wrong thing because we've just been talking about it and I'm tired.
I was just reading. I wouldn't have necessarily got that. Yeah.
Oh, that's so annoying. Because that's what was in my head when you said about the dragons, was the dragons in 3D.
I never thought of that.
But of course, that was released in 1987 as well.
Yeah, well, we're sort of, because we've been sort of nattering quite a few, I suppose we'll skip on to the next classic. Have you ever played Phantasy Star at all?
Not my type of game, I'm afraid.
I'll be honest, I do not do the
role-playing ones.
Oh, God, no, me either.
Well, I suppose we'll skip on from that one, although people will probably be screaming at us because it is seen as an absolute classic. But I'm probably the same as you, that it's... With RPGs, I can just about deal with Zelda, but as I say, I struggle with a lot of the RPGs. But it's very highly regarded, isn't it, if you're into that sort of game?
I think we need an RPG specialist on the Retro Asylum. So I don't think there's one Retro Asylum host that actually likes RPGs there. There's probably plenty of listeners of ours that love RPGs, except they'll probably get wound up that we just never cover any RPGs.
Yeah, exactly.
Anytime any of them come up, no, they'll like them, don't like them. So we're probably alienating so many listeners by not doing that.
we'll have to do like a... put us in one of those Clockwork Orange machines, isn't it, where we open our eyes and force ourselves to play all these RPGs until we love them.
I think I'd hold my breath and kill myself.
Maybe we're in the right and RPGs are rubbish, and then what could happen is we'll get someone in to do one. They'll do a full episode about RPGs and we'll lose all our listeners.
Yeah. Maybe that's what they like, is that we don't like the RPGs. But yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at the list of all the ones that came out in 87. I mean, you had the sequel of Wonder Boy and Monster Land. I mean, that's a great game. One game that I really want to shout out, because this for me is my favourite game on the Master System, and that is Zillion. Have you guys ever played this?
No, is this the one you mentioned before?
Yeah, so basically, as I mentioned before, Sega did a deal, when they were designing that gun with the anime, and in 87 they actually came out with a game about... Well, they actually came out with two games based on the anime. And the first one, Zillion, is brilliant. It's kind of like Impossible Mission.
Yeah.
On the C64.
Do you know what it really reminded me of? I played it today for the first time. I've had it for a while and I know it's one that's
worth, you know, decent-ish money. It really reminds me of Metroid.
Yeah, a lot of people sort of say with that.
I'm not surprised, because, I mean, I've never heard anyone talk about it. I've known the game, had it for a while, but I've never played it or watched a video of it or anything. And I played it today, and it really did remind me of Metroid.
Yeah, I mean, for a lot of people, until you understand the nature of the game, it's easy to get lost with, because it's all based on each room you come to, you basically have canisters.
Yeah.
And you shoot them and it gives you a key letter which you have to jot down on a bit of paper. It's definitely one of those games you need a bit of paper to the side. And you jot down these sort of like symbols. And then when you go on the computer, you can enter those canister symbols because that's telling you the password.
Yeah, it gives you that information at the beginning of the game, doesn't it? I was kind of scrolling through it really quickly, and then I realized what I'd done, kind of as I found one of these symbols for the first time.
Well, you basically, as you pick up these cards, you can do general controls, which is things like you can sort of like, you know, stop a laser barrier or something like that. So you can use a card to stop a laser barrier, and that's just entering those codes that show at the beginning. But to actually open doors, you need to know what the password is with all the canisters. Where it becomes confusing is sometimes because certain canisters you need a more powerful zillion gun. So where it gets confusing there is you can't shoot all the canisters. You actually have to go and do something else in another room and come back. And that's where. So it's definitely one of those games you either need a ridiculously good memory, which I certainly don't have, or you sit down and you really have to sort of map out things and sort of write down all these sort of like codes. But I've absolutely adore this game. It's just really involved. It's got great music and it looks, you know, fantastic, and it plays really well. If people love those sort of games like Impossible Mission, and that's a real favorite of yours, give Zillion a go on the Master System, and I think you'll be pleasantly surprised with it.
Cool.
Yeah. The sequel, however, Zillion 2, The Tri-Formation, is a totally different game that came out the same year. And I suppose you'd say this is like the action version. It's just a plain shoot-em-up. So you're on like a motorbike, which is quite cool, left to right, and you just shoot everything. It's a bit of fun, but, you know, compared to the original, it's not a classic. And in later levels, you're on foot. But it's kind of like action version of Zillion, really, and a bit of a disappointment if you...
Zillion 2 just looks like far more the game I'd want to play.
Yeah, I think perhaps a lot of people will probably prefer the more action orientated. I don't know. I've got a morbid fascination with doing maps of things.
Right. So yeah,
I think it comes from my Spectrum days.
I am the total opposite. If I start getting lost in a game and there's loads of rooms and I just get fed up. So yeah, I'm a bit
like that. Keep me on rails. I'll get distracted.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, in which case, Zillion 2 probably be more your cup of tea.
Now, Sega challenges you to experience SegaScope 3D. 3D so real, it puts the action right in your face. Not even 3D effects like these can match what you'll see through these amazing SegaScope 3D glasses. Games and accessories sold separately. And nothing but the experience itself can give you the challenge and excitement of Sega games like Zaxxon 3D, coming soon. And Missile Defense 3D, SegaScope 3D, only on the Sega system. Sega, the challenge will always be there.
Yeah, so moving on to 88, and this is where one of the things that Sega came out with was this year was the 3D glasses, of course.
Uh-huh.
And as Swaney was keen to tell me, it's not the first 3D glasses, because the Vectrex got there first a few years earlier with their system. This is one of my things that I always wanted to try, the 3D glasses that came with the Master System, and I've never ever tried them, which is... I've heard it, the depth of 3D is really, really good. And this sort of came out in the end of October 1988, and it would have been a pack-in at the time. I think they called it the Super System, so it was a bit more money, $129.99, but you would get the 3D glasses and the light phaser, So it's quite a good deal, really. And I think that's where you got the game Missile Defense 3D, which is supposed to be quite a good shooter, sort of with good 3D effects. It's supposed to be one of the better 3D games. I mean, have you guys ever had the pleasure of trying any of the 3D glasses?
No, I mean, I remember seeing the advert for them on the TV and thinking they looked like the coolest thing ever.
They do look cool, don't they? Still very 80s.
Very 80s, but they fit in with the style of the Master System, the original one, and the gun as well, the sort of angular edges. Yeah. But yet never got to actually have a go and see what they were like.
What about you, Ali? Have you had a chance to ever try one of these?
I haven't. No, I've never actually seen a pair in the kind of real life, so to speak. So no, I haven't had the pleasure. No, I don't actually hear that they make your eyes bleed like the Virtual Boy kind of gets mocked for either. So
yeah, well, because the way really they're sort of, as I understand them, they're I think it is one of those where it sort of switches. It's sort of synced in, isn't it? And it's switching between. I think it's using the sort of red and green, but because it's switching and it's synced in to the TV, it's supposed to be quite impressive with the 3D. As I say, I've always wanted one because they just look so darn cool. One of the other podcasts that I listen to is Retro Game Squad, and one of the guys had recently bought one, and he's got a picture of him looking like doing the James Bond pose with the 3D glasses on and the light phaser. It just made me smile. It looked really, really cool. I mean, they only came out with quick count, six games for the 3D glasses, and I have to say I've never got a chance to really play any of these because, well, if you run it through an emulator, you just sort of see your eyes will bleed because you just see this sort of blurry mess. I think some of them did have options where you could choose to switch off the 3D. But they had things like, of course, the Outrun 3D, which, of course, we know Outrun. Space Harrier 3D, which is supposed to be really good. Zaxxon 3D, where they completely changed it from, you know how the original arcade Zaxxon is sort of isometric?
Yeah.
They actually changed it to from behind 3D. It looks really good, and people have a lot of, you know, nothing but good things to say about the system. It's just one of those things I've never managed to pick up.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I'd love to see one at like one of the expos, and just so I can have a go.
Yeah, no, I'd love to try some of these games. But I think we're already sort of seeing, as we're going rattling through these games, just how many absolute classics the Master System had, you know, in terms of games. And we've not even come to some of the later classics here, you know, already. I mean, you had Alex Kidd, The Lost Stars. Have you ever played that one?
No, I haven't.
That's really good. Sort of a very, again, it's sort of completely different to the original Alex Kidd game in that it's a simple left to right platformer, very pure, a bit like Wonder Boy in that effect. And you're jumping over dogs that go that actually bark, and it says the words bow wow as it comes out the mouth. And this has got probably, in fact, I will play this. It's got one of the best tunes, I think. You know, I just love it. It's one of the catchiest music ever. Really good. So I'll play some of this now just to give us a break. Now, I hope you enjoyed that. But as I say, with Alex Kidd, it's just a fun, pure game that is just a lot of fun. People complain that it's too easy, but I kind of like easy, especially as I get older. I'm not always for the old school challenge, but just thinking of the other games. And another one was, of course, Power Strike, that I think you mentioned earlier, wasn't it, Ali? Which some people know as a least.
It was me.
Was it you?
Yeah, I had this back in the day. And like I said, it's just a really fast-paced, upward-scrolling shooter one. Twitchy, but, you know, I think the Master System did a good job with shooting ups.
They did, didn't they? They did really, really good. And, of course, these were Compile shooters. Compile was like the company. And they always did quality. I mean, for those who are on the NES, they did Zanac on the NES. So if you know that, if you know what, hopefully that will give you an idea of what to expect. Basically, all their shooters are amazing, but platinum hard.
Yeah,
will...
it was super hard.
But yeah, Ali, have you ever played that one or not really? Or
Power Strike.
Yeah.
I play Power Strike. I like Power Strike. It's a good game.
Good shooter.
Yeah, no, I like
good,
it.
Good shooter.
I played it earlier as well. Again, it's not massively easy.
No. But you're right. I mean, I'm just thinking with the shooters, they're just such a wide range. I mean, you've got, you know, R-Type was another game that came out, but I always found the R-Type on the Master System a little bit sort of flickery, isn't it, with the graphics?
Well,
it was still quite a solid port.
Yeah,
there.
I mean, that was the same with Power Strike. There's quite a bit of flicker to it.
Yeah, I suppose that's one thing they had, wasn't it, with it?
If you want flicker on the Master System, you need to play some Double Dragon. That's got serious flicker there, has, and terrible collision detection.
Yeah. It's I tried to, because I mean, I realised a lot of the games, like some of the arcade ones, I was trying to keep ones that were very unique for the Master System, you know, when we were covering, you know, because you're right, with a lot of the games like Double Dragon and some of the arcade conversions, they were probably better versions elsewhere. Few notable exceptions, like which we will mention, like Rastan and things like that. But of course, like Ninja Gaiden was much better on the Master System.
Yeah, that was a really good game. I played that earlier today for the first time, and it surprised me.
Yeah, it's different. It's totally different from the NES classic.
Shadow Warriors, but, I think, wasn't it on the NES?
No. You also had Ninja Gaiden on the NES. There was Shadow Warriors was the sequel to Shinobi, and Shinobi's another great one on the Master System.
Shinobi's one of my favourite games. I must have had that back in the day as well, because I've got some big memories of that. And fantastic conversion of it, really good.
And of course, with the Master System version, you get the health bar. So unlike the arcade original, it's not just one hit and you're dead. So in some ways, it's a bit easier.
Yeah, definitely. Sorry, yeah. I'm just looking at my copy at the moment and just admiring the artwork on the front.
That's one thing you will say about the Master System is, you know, when you look at the individual games and things, you see that sort of grid work of, you know, the white colour design, and often with simple images, although the Ninja Gaiden one's quite a nice one. You think, oh, it doesn't look very good, but when you see all the Master System games on a shelf together, it just looks wonderful, doesn't it?
It does, and then they decided to ruin it with the odd one that had like a completely black colour or something like that, which is really annoying for someone with OCD. For example, Robocop versus Terminator.
Ah, yes, yeah. I suppose that was when they were trying to make it, you know, look like it was like the Mega Drive, like, wasn't it? I suppose the later ones, wasn't it, that came along. But one of the classics that we haven't mentioned was Wonder Boy 3, which is called The Dragon's Trap. Have you ever played this? This is probably a lot of people's favourite game on the Master System, and probably one of my favourites as well.
I've never played this, and I'm going to have to try and dig it out, because it really is like lauded, isn't it? It's like one of the best Master System games ever.
It is, yeah. And it looks fantastic. You've sort of typical sort of like the later Wonder Boy, where you're sort of mixing in light RPG. But it, again, it's reminded me again of a lot of sort of Metroid-like in that there's lots of exploring and you're sort of backtracking to get through. Because what it is you'll find certain sections which will turn you into different creatures, and that lets you get to other sections of the map that you couldn't do before. So there's a lot to love with it. You've got ender level bosses, and it's definitely for those, you know, wanting to see what the Master System could do. I'd probably recommend Wonder Boy Dragon's Trap as probably the first game to sort of give a go with. Do you have fond memories of it, Ali, at all?
I don't have memories of playing it back in the day or anything like that, because I think I'd way moved on from the Master System by the time this came out. I think, what year was this?
89?
No, 89.
Was it 89? Was it? Crikey, maybe not then. Clearly not, because that picture was taken in 1990, that I spoke of earlier. I always assumed
Remember with the internet, you know, a lot of these, though it's 89, maybe by the time it got to the UK, it might have been a bit later.
Yeah.
I'm going to use a trusty wiki. Let's have a look. Let's see. Oh, it doesn't tell. It doesn't tell us.
This isn't the one that I thought it was. I was just checking the video of it, and I've played one recently, and it's not this one.
You probably played the second one, which we sort of skipped over.
I can't remember.
But it's, I mean, this is probably...
Monster World. I think.
Oh, that's the fourth one, wasn't it? I think that was Japanese only, wasn't it?
Oh, I'm confused myself now. Checking the video like I am now, this one is definitely not one I've played. I've got it, but I definitely haven't played it. But that's because I'm not a huge kind of Wonder Boy fan, if you know what I mean. It's not one of my go-to games.
Well, it's definitely, if you like that sort of Metroid-style game, I'd say Metroid is probably the good style of the sort of game this is, or Castlevania-type thing. It's like a cuter version of that, and there's a lot of depth, surprising depth to the game actually as you go and play it.
It really changed from the original kind of Wonder Boy style, hasn't it? It's really kind of changed into a completely different kind of game.
Yes, yeah, compared to the first one, isn't it? It's just completely sort of changed it round, and for the better, really. As much as I like the purity of the original, I think the sort of the more sprawling RPG-like versions of the game certainly were better revered.
No. Give me my skateboard back.
They're coming out with a new Wonder Boy game, aren't they?
Are they?
Well, in all but name, isn't it? The original creator is designing one. I think you did a Kickstarter.
I wonder if it'll have a name like Dragon's Trap, because that's an arse, sound like a euphemism for something rude, doesn't it?
Only to you, Steve.
Wonder Boy the Wizard's Sleeve. Anyway.
Your mind's always in the gutter.
Sorry.
The Wizard's Sleeve.
Now, another game that I should mention, because there's a friend of mine that would never forgive me if I didn't mention it, and that was Psycho Fox. Which was a platformer that we mentioned earlier, wasn't it?
It's one of Mr. Davies' favourite games, that is.
Yeah, is it really?
Yeah.
Is it really his favourite? I don't understand why people like it, because it annoys me.
Yeah, I had exactly the same with it earlier today when I played it for the first time. I just did not like it at all.
I had it in the day, and I loved it. I thought it was really cool, the way you could like get the, I think it's three or four different animals that you can become.
That's right,
they've all got different strengths. But when I played it recently again, it's so hard.
Well, the trouble is, I mean, for those who don't know, it's like a cute sort of platformer. You play a fox, and Steve mentioned you can sort of you can pick up items and morph into three other animals to get unique abilities. Things like the tiger and the hippo, I think, and different things like that. But what's really annoying to me with the game is that they've decided to do a completely different jump mechanic to every single other platformer that I've ever played. They've put a realistic jump mechanic. So if you're running and jump, you'll get more inertia, and that will take you further.
You slide.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That took me two lives to work out earlier to get to that first jump on the little block of the thing. I was just like, what? I've stood still, I've jumped, and I can't make it. What's that all about? So then I, yeah, exactly. I had to run, jump onto it, and then jump onto the next bit. That was annoying.
And then And then just when you learn with that, then you become another creature, and then it's completely different. You have to sort of relearn the jump mechanic for that creature. So it drives me. I mean, I think I've been weaned too much on things like Mario and things like that, and well, every other platformer, that it just frustrates me. But I mean, there's a lot to love with it, isn't it? It's very cute, and it's got the vibrant Master System color palette, and I can see why people have time for it. But yeah, I think unless you had it back in the day, you probably would struggle with this.
Bit like owning a Speccy. Oops, did I say
that? Yeah, but just better than owning a Speccy. I shouldn't say that. I'm a Speccy owner now.
Yeah, you're a Speccy owner now. You've joined the other side. You've joined the dark side. But rustling on, I suppose we'll go to 1990, and of course that's when you got the Master System 2, and this is where I think a lot of our younger listeners, we're all old typically, but the people that perhaps younger than I am,
less grey than us,
they probably, this was their first experience, was probably the Master System 2, because this was a real affordable price. It was released £59.99, so 60 quid.
Crikey, was it that cheap?
It was that cheap. I mean, of course, you know, I mean, it's 1990, so a bit more than it was today, but you know, it really was sort of like a budget model. So it would have been very favourable to a lot of parents, I imagine, for Christmas and things. But sadly, it was a total redesign of the console. It's quite they made it sort of very sort of square and ugly looking. It's not like the fantastic 80s look of the original. And you lost things like the card reader. That was probably no biggie for a lot of people. But also apparently the 3D glasses won't work, because I think the 3D glasses use that card reader. So,
yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, when the second one came out, this one you're talking about, I just thought it looked rubbish. And I still think it looks rubbish. If I see one in a car boot sale, I just walk past it. I just don't like the look of it. It looks like a cheap toy. And I think... Sorry, go on.
No, you're absolutely right. But you can imagine to a lot of people, if it was their first console, this would probably be the one that they want, you know what I mean? Because
it looks like it was aimed at 10-year-olds, you know, like a proper round little toy. It's the same thing though, because like I think when a console initially comes out with its first proper design, it wants to be taken seriously as a gaming platform, and you can tell with the first Sega Master System, well, I'm saying the first one, they know the one we've been talking about, it looks like it's a serious piece of kit. And they've got to the point then, they've just gone iteration after iteration, and like Mega Drive's out now probably as well. And it's like, we'll just flog these to kids now, and it just looks rubbish. And I think you'll notice that the same thing happened with like the PlayStation 1 and PlayStation 2. The PlayStation 1 went down to like what looked like a portable handheld CD player.
Yes.
Become a tiny little blob of a console.
They did exactly the same to the Mega Drive, didn't they? They had the initial sleek kind of looking one, and then they brought out that monstrosity for the Mega Drive.
Exactly,
too.
Exactly.
Cheaper plastic, much lighter, just felt flimsy, and it was very, very breakable, really. I mean, I've gone through, I don't know how many Mega Drives and stuff I've come across in the last couple of years, and I think there's only ever been one that hasn't worked. Mega Drive 2 is much, much worse in terms of reliability. I think it's just
because
of much cheaper kind of thing to use. And I think it's the same for the Mega Drive 2 as well. I mean, all the Master System 1s, Mark 1s seem to be fine, but then I've had quite a few faulty Mark 2s.
And the thing is, I mean, it's the same for me. It's like, I just wouldn't want the Mark 2 in my collection. I wouldn't want people to walk into my like gaming room and go, check it out. Master System 2.
Oh, you console snob.
I am a snob.
You've got a Mark 2.
You've got a Mark 2. What are you? You're not a proper gamer. Get out.
but I mean, you saying it looks like it was designed for 10-year-old kids. Well, that's probably because it was.
Yeah.
Because the Mega Drive was out at this point, isn't it? This was the for the family where young Timmy or...
Timmy.
Or Timmy or Sheila. I don't know where Sheila came from. The young kid, you know, that perhaps had the older brother had the Mega Drive, yeah. And the young kid, you know, wanted their own console that was a cheaper model, wasn't it? That's where I think this sort of came in. And you really start to see at this point, you know, this is where there was a lot of games which were versions that were out on the Mega Drive, but it was... But the Master System would see its own version, you know, like with Sonic and things like Castle of Illusion and things like that. And then often they were, you know, because they were redesigns of the game, they were often not better, but, you know, very good in their own way, stand alone. I agree with you, I don't like the design of it, but I can understand why there's quite a bit of love for those that perhaps it were, where it was their first console. We'd also like to thank our corporate sponsors. This month we have Bitmap Books. This is, of course, our friend Sam Dyer, who's now kickstarting his third book on the Spectrum right now. It looks absolutely amazing, and he's already reached the very apt 48,000 towards his Kickstarter support. So that means not only will you get the Spectrum book, but you'll get an Alistair Brimble mix CD of his Spectrum works, a laptop sticker that says my other computer is a ZX Spectrum, and 5 loader postcards as well. Our other corporate sponsors are Retro Towers, whom sell, of course, those brilliant EverDrives that we keep banging on about, and numerous other retro items, of course. And don't forget that you can apply for a 5% discount on anything you buy there by entering Retro Asylum, all one word and lowercase, at the checkout. And also we have Funstock UK, who sell many retro items, and don't forget, on Funstock as well, you can enter a 5% discount code there as well, entering Asylum, all lowercase, at the checkout. So thank you to everyone for your support in keeping our community going. And, I mean, going into 1990, there were some great games. I mean, we'll just rattle through, because it's going on quite long, isn't it, this episode. But, you know, there was Dan and the Jungle Fighter, which is sort of like Conan the Barbarian type thing, and you're sort of attacking creatures that look like, well, they look kind of like butterflies. I think they're supposed to be birds, and attacking Amazon women and things like that. I mean, that's a lot of fun. And another one we mentioned was Alex Kidd in Shinobi World, which I think Ali sort of said that was your favourite, wasn't it?
It's my favourite Alex Kidd game, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is one of my regrets, actually, with Alex Kidd, because the Shinobi World, you're right, it's brilliant. I think it was originally going to be like Shinobi Kid. That was the original sort of idea. And, you know, it is, they capture the idea of Shinobi, but obviously they just sort of stuck in the Alex Kidd character. And their original plans, as I understand it, they were going to do a series of them. They were going to do Alex Kidd in Golden Axe World or whatever, and, you know, fantasy style. And they were doing all these things. But, of course, then a blue hedgehog came along and sort of scuppered it for Alex. And that's a real shame. I would love to have seen. Can you imagine, like, Alex Kidd in Golden Axe or Fantasy Star World? You know, it would have been brilliant fun. But, yeah, Shinobi World, really, really playable. If you love those sort of games, that Shinobi-like games, really, playable game. A lot of fun with it.
Awesome.
And the same with that era, you know, Castle Illusion was great on the Master System, so really stands on its own. You had games like Asterix, real sort of classic. Another favourite of mine is Outrun Europa, which is sort of, I think it was done by Probe Software, sort of European version of Outrun, where really nothing to do with Outrun. You're on like a motorbike and you're sort of having to do sort of chase HQ elements, isn't it? You're sort of and you change vehicles as you progress. Have you ever played Outrun Europa at all?
I haven't, but that just sounds like blasphemy, because Outrun is a rare Ferrari.
Yeah, it is. It really is one of those you just have to say it's not out there. But it's amazing how sort of fast it runs on the Master System. Probe did a really good job with it. It's quite a fun racer.
I'll check it out.
And of course, the other ones in 91 that we should mention is, again, we're not really into our RPGs, but Golden Axe Warrior. I know that that's seen quite fondly with people. Now, Ali, you mentioned you had that. Have you actually played it, or you, because it's RPG?
I got it. I went, Golden Axe Warrior, this is supposed to be really good. I got it, was really excited, looked closely at it, realised it was an RPG, and put it in the collection.
I mean, I gave it a little go. It's kind of like Zelda type of RPG, which is good. In that, you know, it doesn't seem to get too much more complex than swinging your sword. But, yeah, I don't know. I can't really comment on Golden Axe Warrior because I didn't spend enough time with it to sort of say with it. Now, of course, in 1991, Master System would come out with their own Sonic the Hedgehog versions. And, of course, the following year you had Sonic the Hedgehog 2. Now, these are quite good versions. Have you ever sort of played the ones on the Master System? Because they are sort of different.
I'd already moved on to the Mega Drive by the time Sonic had come out.
Yeah.
So I never had it on the Master System, but when I've gone back and played it, yeah, they're not exactly the same games, but the versions that they've managed to do capture the speed of Sonic, and you know they're pretty good quality games, to be fair.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and it's I kind of like this because the Master System can't go to the speeds of Sonic on the Mega Drive. I kind of like the slower pace. Sometimes I find still got pace, yeah. Yeah. Well, of course, my favourite one, which you have got a unique Sonic game called Sonic Chaos. It came out in 1993, so right at the end of the Master System in the UK. And that's a brilliant version. You actually have Sonic on a sort of jet board at certain points, so you sort of can fly around the level as one of a power-up. I had a lot of fun with that. Did you ever play any of the Sonic games at all, Steve?
Like Ali said there, it was mainly my mates had them on the Mega Drive by this point.
Yes, yeah. Well, they're well worth playing because they are different on the Master System to the Mega Drive. Probably one of the best ways to play it if you don't have a Master System. I think it was on the PS2 and Xbox. There was the Sonic Collection Plus.
Oh, okay.
Compilation, and that is brilliant. If you're a Sonic fan, it literally has the Plus compilation has every iteration pretty much of Sonic, 8-bit and 16-bit Sonic, and it's got not only all the Mega Drive games, but it's also got the Game Gear and Master System versions, and you have Sonic Chaos in there. So that's a really good cheap way of exploring all of these games if you want to go down the legal official route.
Yeah, yeah.
Going back, one of the games that I've really got to mention because it's one of my favourite games, one of the many. I keep saying my favourite, don't I? But it's one that I absolutely adore on the Master System, and that is Master of Darkness in 1992. It's sort of their answer to Castlevania.
No, I mean, I haven't played this one. Have you, Ali?
Never even heard of it until now.
No.
Well, give this a go. It is awesome. I keep having it on my eBay wish list. I don't think it goes for ridiculous amounts. You know, I think I've seen it go for like 10 or 15 quid. But it's brilliant. It's basically Castlevania. It's just interesting settings. You're on the docks of, like, London. So you all have the fog of London and things, and it just plays. I mean, I don't know if you could bring up like YouTube just to sort of see how good this game looks.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. It does look pretty good. It does pretty much look like a Castlevania game as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, they've gone down that sort of path.
Even up to whacking holes in walls.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it is a sort of clone, but it does sort of stand on its own. And it's just really, really playable. I have a lot of fun with this. It's definitely there's certain games, you know, that we've been sort of mentioning where I'm definitely gonna sort of I really want to build up my Master System collection of just like the ones that I really really want to play. Now, we mentioned Ninja Gaiden, obviously. We're really coming to sort of the end of the Master System in Europe, at least. Because, of course, you had one of the other ones that I would like to mention, which was sort of the two tail-end games, was The Flash, which was a probe game. Now, you think Sonic was fast. Now, the Flash is, of course, the superhero, and I don't think The Flash has appeared in many video games, so it's quite unique having a Flash, a video game based on the Flash character. But it, you know, you thought Sonic was fast. The Flash is almost too fast in the game. It's amazing what Probe, the developer Probe, managed to get with the game.
Probe were a big Amiga publisher, weren't they?
Yeah, they did quite a few. I mean, Probe sort of did loads. I mean, they did things like on the Spectrum as well, and I'm sure... Did they do stuff on the Commodore 64, Steve?
I think so. I can't quite remember. I'm just looking at the Flash now, actually, on the YouTube. It is crazy fast.
It is crazy fast, and but it's a lot of fun. I mean, it's one of those things. Sometimes it's so fast that you sometimes die because you're just going too fast to sort of control everything. But it's one of those games. I think this really is goes for a lot of money.
It's definitely not a cheap one.
Yeah, but it's a lot of fun to sort of play, and it's so nice, particularly because of course the Flash is. Recently had its own TV show. It's one of the few games that actually you can play as the Flash, which is quite cool if you like your superhero games. But yeah, I mean, and then of course the talking of rare games, I don't know, how much does Power Strike 2 come with? Because that was one of the last games in 1993.
Yeah, that's a pretty expensive game as well.
Yeah, and to be honest, when I tried Power Strike 2, whereas the first one was like super hard, but I felt reasonably in control. I don't know if it's my emulation or if I tried it on the EverDrive as well, but it was just so fast. I just couldn't work out what the hell was going on. Just sort of died within like a few minutes every time.
Yeah, you're looking at a minimum of £100 for that, between 100 and 150 if it's,
that,
if it's
yeah.
complete.
Well, as I say, I mean, unless you're into collecting the set, I found Power Strike 2 very impressive with how fast it was doing things. So I can see why people perhaps enjoy it, but I found there was just so much going on, I just struggled to survive. But that might be me being a gaming wimp. But of course, you know, that was pretty much it for Europe. Everybody had moved on, you know, by 1993, pretty much everybody had moved on, definitely to sort of Mega Drive for a number of years, and you know, you're starting to look at the CDs at that point, isn't it? You know, as you go into sort of 94 and 95. But over in South America, particularly Brazil, as we mentioned before, the Master System would continue to be a huge hit. And it's fascinating to see some of these games that were released by Tectoy, which was like the publisher that specialized with the Brazilian games. You know, they really did some interesting versions of the games. You know, like they would come out with like Street Fighter 2 and even Duke Nukem 3D, if you can believe it, in 98. Just amazing what they would come out with, and definitely for collectors, I think it would be amazing if you had that Tectoy collection. But one of the ones I will mention is the Virtua Fighter animation. They actually came out with a Virtua Fighter game in Brazil. And I actually played it And it's such a shame that it looks beautiful. They've turned it into just a 2D fighter, yeah. You know, very basic little characters. But all the characters are there, you know, and they're wonderfully represented. And it's got all this wonderful backstory and things like that. It's a great game. But it was just stupidly easy. It was the sort of thing when I was watching TV and not even looking at the screen and still beating the other person. So I got a feeling it's one of those that it'd be good, perhaps if you, you know, perhaps if you had two player, it's probably quite good. But as a single player, I completed it.
Wow.
And that was without concentrating. And this is me, I'm not a good game player. So, if, you know, I mean, but yeah, I can imagine there's a lot of obscure things in Brazil that for the Master System. And it's fascinating to sort of see, you know, what they managed to get the Master System to do, leading right the way up to sort of like, you know, into the 2000s. I think the last one was 2005, possibly, off the top of my head.
I think it's just cool that these things just had a life, you know, had a lifespan after we think it ended. It was still going.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, so I mean, I'm looking here, you know, and of course they were Tectoy even released their own sort of. There were things like the Master System 3 and other consoles were released, you know, for the Brazil region and other regions. So it really did carry on for a long time.
They also got a Mega Drive 3 as well, didn't they? I think they got some craziness out there.
Yeah, well, and I think they've got good taste. They love their Sega, like I do. but yeah, no, it's just nice, you know, to sort of carry on, you know, as it sort of carried on with all of these. And I think that's the important lesson to take away with the Master System is, you know, that it really wasn't the failure that it's often purported to be. I mean, the Master System sold 15 million units worldwide. Now, I mean, you compare that, okay, against the Nintendo NES or Famicom of 64 million units. Yes, it was. You know, it pales in comparison. But as I mentioned at the beginning, you know, in Europe that was 6.8 million. The NES in Europe was 3.5 million. You know, and in Brazil they sold 5 million units. Although it didn't do particularly well in the US. You know, the US, I think, only sold 2 million Master Systems and only 1 million Master Systems in Japan. So although it failed in those regions, it really was a success. And as I mentioned, you know, in Europe it was actually almost 2-1 as popular as the NES console over here.
Well, I mean, I don't see it as a failure as well. I mean, I even back in the day, I remember it as the dominant one. And it was only when we got older and realised that in the States it had been a bit of a flop. In comparison to the NES, like Ali said before, most people I knew, if they had a console, they had a Master System. I didn't know anyone with a NES.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So if we do have any sort of American listeners, you know, I really urge you to, you know, give the console a try, because there's hopefully, as you've sort of seen here, there's some amazing games, you know, and people in Europe as well, you know, and wherever you are, really, just give if you have not tried the Master System, give it a go, because it's just got that wonderful color palette, full of unique games, and it's a lot of fun, isn't
yeah,
it?
Vibrant.
So, I mean, obviously I've rattled through some of the ones that people see as classics. Is there any particular games you guys want to shout out that perhaps are your own personal favourites, or are you happy with what we covered?
Well, I think, I mean, from my own point of view, I think we've covered the ones that I owned, you know, during the podcast. It's, Ali, how about you?
Some of the games that I like playing, the Cyber Shinobi in...
Oh,
1990,
yes, yeah.
That's quite a good one. One of my favourite games on it actually is because it's the only version that I know of that I can play on a home console, and that is one of my favourite arcade games called Bank Panic.
Oh yes, that's a light gun game, isn't it?
No, it's not. It's
Is it not? Okay.
It's not. It should be.
No,
it should be, but
yeah.
It's not.
I remember this in the arcade, isn't it? You choose left, middle, or right.
Yeah, exactly. Like which doesn't lend particularly well to two buttons, so you have to kind of do a lot of moving around. But I used to have it on an old MAME emulator on a laptop a long time ago, and you could easily use three buttons then. But it's nice to have it as like a as a proper physical piece of media. Any other ones? Can't really think. I mean, obviously they had conversions of Streets of Rage and all those kind of things. A lot of the games that came out on the Mega Drive, etc., are decent to have, but then, you know, they're clearly better on the Mega Drive in most cases. Altered Beast and things like that. You did have those kind of AAA titles of the time coming out on the Master System to cater for those that, you know, that didn't have a Mega Drive. We haven't really touched upon any of those, but I mean, they're the obvious ones, aren't they, really? We're more talking about the more exclusive games to the Master System.
Yeah, no, definitely. I tried to, you know, when we were sort of compiling this list, we didn't want, you know, we tried to keep ones that was particularly unique to the system, because as you say, there was, you know, there was many great arcade ports that it did, but, you know, there were better versions elsewhere. And of course, you know, I mean, there's hundreds and hundreds of games that came out. I think something like, you'll probably know, Ali, but something like about 360 games or something like that. Yeah, so, I mean, obviously we couldn't cover sort of all of them. The only ones I'll personally mention is I've got a soft spot for Battle Outrun in 1989, which was sort of like a Chase HQ.
Mm-hmm.
And this time you did have a Ferrari.
Good.
And that runs really smoothly, and it's, it is like Chase HQ, though. You're sort of like, you know, having to sort of knock the other car off the road. It's total Chase HQ ripoff. It's an Outrun that's unique to the Master System. So it's a great one to have in the collection, which I do own.
Nice.
It's one of the ones I have on the shelf. And the other one I've got a real dodgy soft spot for is Trivial Pursuit. Because it's that bloody parrot. He's so sarcastic. When you get, he'll turn around and say, "Well, you should have known that," and it's the same parrot that I think appeared in like on the CD32 and things like that. But I don't know, I just like his sarcastic outlook on life. But a lot of fun. But you know, hopefully people will give the console a try and try some of these games, and hopefully you'll have the same fun as we had with the system.
Absolutely,
definitely. Well, let's just wrap it up with let's put on this brilliant advert for the Master System where they did this fantastic rap. So enjoy, guys.
Okay, guys.
And till next time, we'll see you later.
Stay retro.
Bye-bye now.
Cheers.
Yo, Nick and Steve, you coming out tonight?
No, man. We're staying in to check out a brand new Sega console.
Sega? What's that?
Check this out.
Yo, Master System cost them £80. 128 color and 3 channel sound. Yeah, they got more games than Fish of the Ducks. Like Operation Warfare and Psycho Fox. HQ, World Soccer, Baseball, Wonder Boy 2. The list of games goes on and on and on. Sega Pass is over 100 strong. Sega. Sega. Sega.
Yeah, man, sound dope. Tell me more.
Yeah, okay. As well as a console, you get it like a phaser. Far West War, GameCube Major. 3D glasses will blow your mind. Hottest, most respected console in the streets today. Sega! Sega.